I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to La Liga Lowdown. It's our match day 35 recap podcast. We're very near the end of the season, and so much has been decided, but there is still lots left to be determined. I'm your host, Matt Clark. I'm joined by Rory Barlow. Lovely to see you, Rory. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very well, Matt. I'm feeling some... I was very sort of re-energised by that Madrid derby, I have to say. I quite enjoyed it, not having too much of a too much pressure on Barcelona based on the results. So, I'm feeling quite happy and quite enthusiastic about La Liga this week. How are you doing, Matt?
Yeah, very well. As we saw, obviously, last week, Real Madrid were crowned champions and they had that incredible comeback in midweek to qualify for the Champions League final since our last pod. So congratulations to them for that. And we turn our attention to La Liga for the 35th round of matches. A full round. There's no Monday night game this time because there is a midweek round coming up. Plenty to get through tonight, but we will endeavour to do so. And we will start in Madrid for that derby. Atleti took it 1-0 with the Yannick Carrasco penalty. Some say it was controversial. We'll get to that perhaps, Rory. But what were your overall takes on the game?
Well, to be honest, I'll deal with that straight away. I don't think it was a penalty. He was already on his way down. And if his leg isn't at a bizarre angle, then the echo doesn't step on it. The actual step, which is the bit that the referee analyses, is not what causes Cunha to go down. And it's not a foul in my view. But overall, I do think Atleti deserved it. They spurned an array of chances here. It was pretty incredible. It was as if Diego Simeone couldn't have like a comfortable Madrid derby victory, so they made him suffer. I thought Real Madrid were probably almost good for a goal as well. But overall, Atleti were the better side. I think they're to a degree fortunate that Karim Benzema wasn't on the park, because if he had been, I think that would have made a big difference. But you have to take your hat off to Atletico Madrid, because they've been in the doldrums. They've been really, really struggling in recent weeks to get results, to score goals. And they came up with a big result, which almost secures Champions League qualification for them now.
Yes, absolutely. A heavily rotated 11 from Carlo Ancelotti. Benzema wasn't there, Modric wasn't there. Plenty of absentees, but... it was Atleti who took the game to them. And as you say, after a run of six games where they'd only scored twice, both of them from Yannick Carrasco, and one of those a penalty, it felt like this game they needed to really come out and take the initiative. And they did so, but through a couple of wasted chances, they hit the post too. It had you feeling like Real Madrid are going to equalise here, aren't they, again? But it didn't come to pass. Atleti got the win. They are now 6 points clear of Betis in fifth. And that means that one more win will do it for them, courtesy of the head-to-head record. And if Betis lose at Mestalla on Tuesday night, then both Sevilla and Atleti will qualify for the Champions League without even playing again. So it's almost done and dusted. We'll come on to Betis in a moment, because we will speak to Roman Darquet, who gets the Barcelona perspective as they qualify for the Champions League. But let's now turn to the Sevilla game. They are facing Villarreal. Both sides, of course, in not the greatest of form. Villarreal trying to chase down Real Sociedad in sixth. They are currently in seventh, which is a Europa League conference spot. But of course, having just been eliminated from the Champions League, they it will feel bittersweet whatever happens for them. It finished 1-1 at La Cerámica. How on earth did Sevilla come away with a point?
That's an incredible question, and not one that I have an answer for, really. Villarreal, the entire narrative of this game was that Villarreal were going to be hungover from their midweek efforts, that Liverpool would have taken it out of them. But they came out the blocks really pretty fast, and throughout the whole sort of game, they were the ones taking the game to Sevilla. Jules Koundé came out after the match and said that we were trying to press, but we just couldn't. They dominated us. And yeah, Villarreal looked like the team that had a week's rest. Sevilla looked like they were kind of on the ropes, both mentally and physically. Yassine Bono was pretty incredible in goal for them. They did get some fortune in the fact that Jules Koundé headed into his own net before he kind of got the last 96th minute equaliser. But he headed into his own net, goal disallowed for Boulaye's offside, which was rightly so. They were unfortunate, Villarreal, not to get a penalty as well on Etienne Capoue, in my view. But yeah, credit to Unai Emery almost for setting up his team this well. I thought he really got the better of Julen Lopetegui and did pretty much everything that he could do. But to a certain extent, you just need your players to A, put the ball in the back of the net, and B, hold out. They scored with 3 minutes to go, three, 4 minutes to go, and just couldn't hold out. It was a late corner from which Villarreal conceded. And all in all, this was a result that leaves both sides frustrated. Sevilla will be overjoyed that they got a point from this, but the way the game went, the way that Sevilla were dominated, the way that they, I don't know if you could say that they showed no ambition really, but like they weren't able to sort of impose themselves on the game. That's part of the Sevilla frustration. That's part of what's got the Ramon Sanchez Pizjuan on their backs lately. And then Villarreal, the inability to take their chances, to finish out games, and to take advantage of the good play that they've created. So yeah, it was an incredibly frustrating afternoon for both teams and both managers, but quite entertaining for both of us.
Indeed, yes. A great game to watch for a Sunday afternoon. Let's move on to the final couple of games from the top half then. The weekend began on Friday night with Real Sociedad playing Levante. We'll obviously focus a lot more on Levante in part two in the relegation battle, but for La Real, they had a chance to get an early, you know, result on the board and put some pressure on their rivals, but they failed to do so, didn't they? Losing to Levante, which means that Athletic then have the chance to depend on themselves to be in the Europa League, given that Villarreal have to play Real Sociedad, if that makes sense. But then Athletic themselves could only draw 0-0 with Valencia. It's the fourth time they've played Valencia this season, and they haven't been able to win any of them. Of course, the Copa del Rey semi-finals being the most recent matches. Rory, any reflections from this game? Same old story for Athletic, but an inspired Georgian in the Valencian goal.
Yeah, it was Groundhog Day, wasn't it? It was really peak Athletic not being able to score. And Mamardashvili, as you say, he was absolutely phenomenal. It was like a cat in goals for Valencia, and he really saved the point for them. But I think it speaks to sort of the wider problems at Athletic in terms of goal scoring, in terms of finding that sort of innate goal scoring touch. Mikel Vesga missed a really good one, really good opportunity. Vili Libre hit the post, and Iñaki Williams had a couple one-on-ones. And it's really hard to work out exactly what they do, because as we all know, they can't bring in a goal scorer. So how do you kind of solve these issues? It's partly a mental thing, and you could do as much psychological work as you want. But if you've got a team of players who, and you don't have a natural goal scorer in it, you're going to miss more chances than you're going to score. And that's ultimately always going to have an effect on the mind as well. When you know that you don't have goals, it puts more pressure on you to score the chances that you do have. And it was Groundhog Day. It's probably this kind of thing, these kind of draws, that's going to prevent them getting into Europe. And Valencia are the exact opposite of a team that you want to face if you're Athletic, because they try to shut off all the space that they have to run into.
Absolutely. So a frustrating stalemate for Los Leones. But as we've said, because all the other rivals stumbled too, they're still very much in the race for Europe. Only 1 point behind Villarreal in seventh, and only four behind their rivals, La Real. Okay then, so let's round off part one with the reaction from the Benito Villamarín. A fantastic game on Saturday evening between Betis and Barça. And for that, Rory, I'm going to hand over to you. And you spoke to Roman, after which we'll hit the break. But enjoy this, and then join us for part two.
Dani Alves, Alba, gol, Jordi Alba, gol, tal como venía, con el exterior de la bota izquierda, de volea, zambombazo de Jordi Alba. Queda la victoria al Barça si no hay tiempo para...
And I'm joined by Román de Arquer. It's been a while since the two of us at least have spoken on the La Liga Lowdown podcast, and it's nice to have sort of a happier event to discuss. Barcelona beat Real Betis 2-1 at the Benito Villamarín. How are you doing, Román?
Well, I'm happy with the result. Of course, it's not a title, but seeing how the season had started for Barcelona, and probably even before it started, losing Messi kind of meant that it wasn't going to be an easy transition, you know. So overall, it was a tough battle to get there, but now we've finally qualified for the Champions League, which was essential for Barcelona, let's not forget, because we all know the economic situation they're going through, and not qualifying for the Champions League would really have meant dire consequences, we could say, for the club's future.
Excellent, yeah, and they did get this with a win over fifth place Real Betis, so they kind of beat out the next contender, to say at least. A dramatic late winner from Jordi Alba. How did you kind of view this game on the whole? Because Barcelona weren't perfect. For me, they probably just edged it. I don't know if you saw it the same way.
It wasn't a great game. Of course, it wasn't a great rival. It wasn't a great rival. It was a great rival, I mean. And it was really tough to get past Betis. I think it was entertaining for the neutral spectator because, I mean, both sides had their opportunities, especially the second half, I think, was much more lively and entertaining. But Barca did struggle a bit the first half. You know, they were getting there, but they were lacking maybe the last pass, you know, the last part of the equation to get that goal, and they were struggling a bit in that sense. Dembélé, for example, he was getting there to the end of the box, but he was incapable of maybe putting the right cross or getting the right shot, and it happened in general with all the attacking players. So I think in that sense we did struggle, but then in the second half the team was a bit more aware of what they had to do to try and go forward and generate those opportunities, and they looked much better, especially after the substitutions towards the end, where the comeback was completed, you know, with of course Ansu Fati scoring again just a few minutes after being on the field, something he's been doing lately after returning from injuries and stuff. So that's great to see. And also then Jordi Alba with that amazing goal. I think that was a wonderful way to seal the Champions League qualification, you know, for this season. So great news in that sense, but also credit to Betis because they're a great side. They just won the Copa del Rey. They had all that energy because they know they can still make it to Champions League. It's great to see that both sides are competing at this level.
Yeah, and you mentioned that Barcelona have made the Champions League. They've sealed it. They've mathematically qualified with their ninth win in their last 10 away games, I think, in La Liga. This was obviously kind of the target for Xavi when he came in. How do you kind of assess his work up to date? Because I know a lot of people have been perhaps saying that the effect wasn't quite as great as it was when La Xavi Neta was the big deal, and they've obviously tailed off a little bit in recent weeks. But if you were to give an overall assessment at this point, how do you feel it's gone, Román?
Honestly, I'm happy. I'm proud of this team. I think it was, as I said before at the beginning of the pod, it was going to be a very tough season for Barcelona because we all knew that post-Messi era wasn't going to be easy, but people kind of maybe quickly forget about this, you know, just see the present situation and think, oh, we won 4-0 against Madrid, we beat Sevilla, etc. We should be winning, you know, against the smaller sides, which is true, we should be. But I mean, this happens and it's not easy to come halfway through a season when the team was ninth and, you know, qualified to the Champions League after, you know, little by little getting good results. And it wasn't an immediate impact for Xavi because it wasn't easy, you know. He had to restructure many things, change players in the lineup, do things differently overall. And it's also, as I said, it's a tough season. It's not easy to start winning. I know it's Barcelona and you expect always the best, but as I said, it was never going to be an easy transition. So for me, Xavi did a great job, you know. He was coming from also a league which is completely different to the Spanish league as a manager, of course. And it's way more competitive here in La Liga. It's way tougher. The teams are even the smaller teams we've seen are really hard to beat. The Cadiz, the Rayo Vallecanos, etc. They eventually beat us. So, I mean, I think despite those losses, which of course Barca has to work on, I think the team has been way more competitive against the stronger sides, as we've seen against Real Madrid, against Sevilla, against Atletico, etc. So Xavi has managed to maybe make a stronger side when those important teams come to play against you. So for me, it's been a good season, and hopefully the next season will have a proper evaluation of how things go. If Xavi, of course, makes things worse in us in some way, then of course we can criticize his job. But if things keep improving for me, then it'll be good. You'll always have to give managers time, you know.
Definitely. And you mentioned sort of Messi going. Griezmann also went, and that was a large percentage of Barcelona's goals from last season. Ansu, we can't sort of avoid the topic. I mean, he came on and the boy just kind of embodies danger. What does he have that everyone else doesn't?
I think it's just some special thing that some players have, you know, like Messi has, like Ronaldo. And I feel like Ansu possibly has it. But of course, to fully develop this ability or this special spark he has, he needs to play regularly, I think. And hopefully he can overcome this serious injury, which has been really annoying, you know, because here at Barca, we know that he has so much potential. He could possibly be our new superstar. I'm not going to say Messi, because Messi is out of this world, but he could definitely be a super important player for our future, you know. And we really want him to succeed. We really want him to do as best as he can. But of course, these injuries just kind of aren't helping him, not just in terms of not being able to play consistently, but psychologically, you know. This definitely has to affect him. And I think we saw in the first game when he came back the previous week, where he wasn't running too fast. He was going very cautious. You could see he was playing also as a center forward when he usually plays in the wing, probably to avoid having to run up and down and not get injured again. So in this game against Betis, he wasn't moving that much either, even though he got the goal and he took part, you know, in a few plays in attack. But you can tell that he's still a bit worried about, you know, having that same injury again. But it's important that somehow he can overcome that. Like maybe, for example, Dembele, who had so many injuries in the past, and now he seems to have found this good run of consistency where he's playing often and not getting injured. And hopefully Ansu can find that same path. And I mean, as I said, he's going to be crucial for this team if he can keep away from those injuries. And hopefully we'll see much more of this, because Ansu is a phenomenal talent, not just for Barca, but also for the Spanish national team. He's great.
Very true. You mentioned Dembélé there. He's one of the sort of big uncertainties for Barcelona this summer. He's still not renewed his contract, but it does seem as if there's been kind of a turn. There seems to be a willingness from both parties to sit down and talk at the very least. Mm-hmm. And a lot of Barcelona fans have been won round by his recent performances. This was one of those games where the decision-making and the final ball was missing. Mm-hmm. Roman, where do you stand on the big Dembélé question?
Yeah, it's interesting to see how people, maybe a few months back, didn't want to know anything about Dembélé after he didn't renew for Barca. Now suddenly again, there's a lot of talk in terms of him continuing. I would only renew him if it were to sell him at a more expensive price, to be honest. I just don't see Dembélé continuing at Barcelona. He's been, 5 years at the club, and he's really done nothing. I mean, he's a great player. He has a lot of talent, but as you said, his decision-making is just awful. And for example, in my personal opinion, he just stresses me out a lot, you know. When you see that he has so much space, he has a good pass or, you know, a good opportunity, and he just makes a different decision and it goes all wrong. And I know it's not easy to play in the field, that you see things differently than from the TV, of course, but Dembélé really, really has to improve on that decision making. He has been assisting a lot, to be fair, in this second half of the league. I mean, in that sense, he's been good. He's been providing. But maybe if he has the potential of generating 10 great opportunities, he might make the most of one, maybe two. And all the other 8 or 9 opportunities just, you know, go to the trash. So in that sense, I just don't think he's that important to the team, unless he's going to renew for like a really extremely low price and you can have him there and you know he's going to be reliable, then okay. But I just don't think he deserves it, you know. His attitude towards the club in this last 5 years hasn't been good at all. It's true that he has improved his motivation and that attitude in the last so months since Xavi was on board. I mean, that's true. We have to give him credit for that, for maybe changing in that sense. But we can't forget the past, and honestly, I just don't see him being a key player in the future.
Roman has been burnt one too many times by Dembélé, by the sounds of it.
Exactly.
I will wrap it up there. Thank you very much for your time, Roman.
Thank you for having me.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Welcome back to part two of La Liga Lowdown. It's our match day 35 recap, and we're now going to turn our attention to the bottom half, where it's all getting very tense and dramatic. Not least at the Visit Mallorca Estadi on Saturday lunchtime. It was a raucous atmosphere, full house. Plenty of Granada fans made the trip to the island, and it was a real six-pointer between Mallorca and Granada. And it was an incredible result, 6-2 to Granada. And well, we've got Paul McGarrity on the show this week before knowing the results. So, of course, he's pretty dejected, but he gave us his take on the game nonetheless. Over to you, Rory.
Ojo, el robo de balón del Granada. Molina dentro del área. Molina chuta. Gol. Gol, 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 gol. ¡Qué delantero tiene el Granada, por Dios!
Es Kylian Molina.
Jorge Molina. Juego, set y partido. Goleada escandalosa del Granada en Mallorca para salir del descenso. El Granada se aferra a primera, el Granada se agarra a la vida, el sexto.
I'm joined by Paul McGarrity of Over the Bar. He's had a tough week in football. He's a Manchester City fan as well as a Mallorca fan, and let's just say that things haven't gone too well after the Islanders were beaten 6-2 by Granada. So yeah, we're kind of sorry to do this to you, Paul. How are you getting on?
I'm doing all right in the circumstances. I'm hanging in there.
Fingers crossed. It's football can be great, but it can also ruin your week, so to speak. On to the kind of game yesterday. It's Sunday as we're speaking. Mallorca, they sort of looked like they were going to get back into it twice, but ended up losing 6-2. How did you kind of view the match, and what did you make of it? Where did it all go so wrong?
Well, for me, I think it felt like a game where Mallorca, you could say, bottled it, but I wasn't really convinced by the starting 11 when I saw it, to tell you the truth. Seeing Abdon Prats and Mariki up front together, I thought there's not really much mobility there, and maybe you want to go with a physical presence. So, but you trust the manager, don't you? You have to trust the manager in the circumstances. He sees the squad day in, day out. For me, though, it was a case of, I don't know if maybe the occasion was above some of the personalities in the squad, but it was a pretty dreadful start. Picked up a little bit for a brief spell, and then got much worse as the day went on.
Yeah, no, I thought they were going to be a lot more solid in this match, I have to say, which is not saying a great deal. But Javier Aguirre came out after the match, and he said, "So all I can do is ask for the apologies of the fans." Pablo Maffeo looked pretty distraught after the match, did the same thing. What have you kind of made of Aguirre so far? Because we know he's kind of a firefighter. He comes in towards the end of the season and he solidifies teams. I'd been sort of fairly not impressed, but I thought he was doing a decent enough job before this match. Where do you kind of fall on him so far?
To be honest with you, I wasn't overly convinced when we appointed him. I felt like he was given a difficult hand previously at Leganés with, you know, the way the transfer window or the squad was stripped during his period there. So I felt like, well, even though I've never really been convinced of his style, you've got to give everybody an opportunity. But for me, I was prepared to accept an attritional game of football. Maybe, you know, Mallorca could be more difficult to break down. We might score less, but surely we would concede less. And I found him to be quite an infuriating manager, if I'm being honest. I don't think there's a... It seems a bit more like a kitchen sink type approach that we've got, particularly yesterday, and obviously it didn't go anywhere near as well as anyone would have hoped for. So, yeah, he's quite amusing in press conferences, but I would rather see something on the pitch, and I'm not... I think I'm in the minority, to be honest with you, from speaking to other Mallorca fans. I'm just not convinced by him. I think he's been quite... It's only been a handful of games, but I just think it's a terrible appointment, and so I wouldn't be too upset if after this brief spell he moves on.
Yeah, no, you're perfectly entitled to your opinion, and we're obviously speaking to you because you kind of have an inside view of it. And obviously the big question is, can they stay up? They're now in the relegation zone, they're 18th, they're 2 points off safety after Cádiz got out yesterday. What kind of chances do you give them with three games to go?
Virtually no chances, if I'm being honest with you at the moment. I think the lack of character in the performance yesterday, the lack of... I mean, there was perhaps when Antonio Raio scored the second goal and we thought, well, it's 3-2, maybe there's a bit of a fight. Other than that, there just didn't seem to be any real personality. And that's one of the biggest things you need when you're fighting out the bottom. And, you know, the season peaked with an away win. Atletico Madrid, was it December? I think it was now, wasn't it? Or the first week of January. My mind's sort of gone a bit blank after that.
It's all blurs into one.
Yeah, yeah. So since then, it's kind of been a case of just a downward spiral. And so, no, I don't... Everything sort of came down to the game against Granada at home. And the truth be told, Mallorca didn't turn up. Personality-wise, tactically, it was atrocious. So no chance in the remaining fixtures, unfortunately.
So sad. We'll be sad to see Mallorca go if they do end up going down. But fingers crossed for you. I hope they do make it out, because not only are they one of sort of the more fun teams in La Liga, but a great away day. Test too. I will wrap it up there. But thank you very much for your time, Paul.
Oh, thank you very much. It's always a pleasure.
Yes, as you can see there, Paul, pretty dejected after that Mallorca defeat, a very damaging one for them. But they're not out of it. There's still three games to go. Anything can still happen. Rory, but what about Granada? An incredible start for Aitor Caranca, point at the Metropolitano, late draw in the first home game, and then this incredible result at Mallorca.
Yeah, it's hard to sum this one up, to be honest, because I think to a certain extent, this was almost a consequence of them just being so very clinical, because they opened the scoring sort of in the opening minutes, and Mallorca kind of came back into it. They obviously got the Salva Sevilla goal, and as they're going into half time, you'd have said that Mallorca were probably the better side. Then Granada come back out, they score immediately after the half, and from that point on, Mallorca are kind of coming at Granada, which, to be fair, is exactly what you want, and credit to them for sort of showing those that ambition at the start of both halves and for going forward, for trying to get those goals. But Mallorca are not a team that's set up to sort of press you and to play a high line, certainly not Javier Aguirre's Mallorca. And as a result, I think Granada took advantage of it. And Jorge Molina, I mean, I'll let you get onto him later on, because you're a big... if Jorge Molina is a fine wine, then Matt is a big fan of a vintage. So yeah, I'll let you come onto that later. But yeah, I think to an extent they just used the space very well. And we know this Granada team has a lot of quality. We know that they have good attacking players. And so when they do, on the occasion that they do have space, on the occasion that they're not having to sort of run the game to a certain extent because they're not behind or they're not in sort of a tighter game, then that kind of benefits them, and I think we saw that. And they were very clinical. I thought that Sergio Escudero has been very good for them in recent weeks, and he showed that again today. I thought he was good. Antonio Puertas was a clever player, and I thought he was at his best again in this match. And full credit to Granada and Aitor Caranca for getting a result that absolutely nobody saw coming.
Indeed, indeed. Mallorca have been so strong at home. They'd won both their games at home under Aguirre, and Granada have been, you know, pretty hit and miss kind of everywhere all season. So given that Granada started the day in the bottom three, it was kind of the onus was on them to make the running, and they sure did that, didn't they? So even with that result, Mallorca was still outside of the drop zone. But then, of course, later in the day, Cadiz, they won 3-0 against Elche. All three goals coming very late in the game. But again, Sergio has done quite surprisingly well there, hasn't he?
Oof, I have to take a loss here. I completely misjudged Sergio, and I completely misjudged what would happen with Cadiz. And fair enough to him for proving me, and quite a few others, I have to say as well, wrong, because he's been absolutely fantastic since he came in. I think for a lot of us, we expected more of kind of his Valladolid side, and to a certain extent, they played in a similar way at times, but also they've shown a lot more ambition than many of us expected from Sergio. I watched the second half of this, and I saw Cadiz penning Elche in for the entire second half. They were keeping the ball well, they were pressing high, they were all over them. And it took them a while to get the goal. Negredo eventually gets it, but they fully deserved that lead. They fully deserved their victory in this match. And okay, it's a slightly understrength Elche. They're missing a few players, and they've not got too much to play for. But Cadiz under Sergio have been an absolute breath of fresh air. For me, they're the best team in the bottom half of the division at the minute. And yeah, I really can't say enough about how good they've been. And considering this run that they've been on, where they've been playing pretty much exclusively top half sides in the last six or seven matches, to come out of that and still be in with a shot, chapeau, hats off, flowers at his feet, Sergio, you've done an absolutely fantastic job.
You heard it here first. Rory has apologised to Sergio, and
absolutely,
he'll be wearing his Cadiz hat wherever he goes from now on. So that result brought Cadiz out of the bottom three at Mallorca's expense. So yeah, Saturday was a truly awful day for Mallorca. But there's still a couple more teams we haven't mentioned. On Friday night, Levante, they won again against Real Sociedad. They just never give up. They were bottom going into this round of fixtures, but they won again. And we have to ask, can they? We saw a fabulous meme from Paco with a kind of the dead frog laying on the ground, but he's got his oxygen mask there. He's still clinging to life. Well, they're now 29 points, 5 off Granada in 17th, 9 points to play for. It's possible, isn't it? It's possible.
It's possible. You'd never want to say never. I still think it's maybe a game or two too far for Levante. I think they play Real Madrid in midweek, which really doesn't help their chances. But yeah, you've got to give them credit for keeping on fighting, because it really looked as if they were gone quite some time ago. Liski, I think, has shown some sort of not only good sort of group management and good sort of mental management of the Levante squad in that situation, but some good. He's built this Levante team into a much better outfit than they were when he took over. They obviously concede a lot of goals, and part of that is because they don't have great defenders. Like, let's be brutally honest about this. They aren't the best defence in the league in terms of actual quality itself. But Liski has managed to get something out of them. He's got Morales back firing at his absolute best in recent months. And yeah, as much as I don't think they'll do it, I wouldn't want to bet against Jose Luis Morales on fire, because he can cause trouble for anyone.
I mean, if there's anyone that can go to the Bernabeu in midweek when Real Madrid are kind of, again, not really thinking too much about the results, it's El Comandante. And yeah, the fans at the end of that game believed it was a late penalty from Melero to seal the victory after David Silva had equalised for Real Sociedad. The fans were jubilant. Si se puede was ringing around the Ciutat de Valencia. They genuinely believe it's possible. So I think a lot of neutrals would really want to see Levante stay up, more than anyone perhaps in that bottom scrap. Just because of the way they play their football, the goals they score, the excitement they bring, and the way they stand up to the big teams. And, you know, they've already taken points off Real Madrid this season, so it could happen again. It could happen again. But the team that now occupy the bottom of La Liga is Deportivo Alaves. Again, they've had a little upturn since they appointed Julio Velasquez. They won both their home games under him. But this fixture was away at Balaidos, and it's safe to say they didn't have a sniff in this one. a pretty remarkably impressive performance from Celta, one that we want to see far more of. Denis Suarez, phenomenal. Iago Aspas, superlative.
I have to say, Denis Suarez's assist for the second goal is absolute magic, and you can see why he spent the first kind of few years of his career at Manchester City and Barcelona, because he has that eye for a pass, he has that sort of incisive, smooth football in him. And yeah, Celta, if you get them on one of their good days, they're trouble for anyone. And for an Alaves side that have won just one away from home, you concede early, it was just never going to work out for them, to be perfectly honest. And if I don't think Levante can do it, well then I'm 99.999% certain that Alaves can.
You're putting a fork in them then.
Yep, they're done. They're second division for me. And it's a shame because I've been to Mendizorroza. I absolutely love it there. I think Vitoria is a lovely place. Great people. Great addition to La Liga. But I think if you look at the sporting management of this team and the way that they've gone about their survival attempts in the last 2-3 seasons, this was always going to come to a team that sacks 2-3 managers a season.
Yeah, I remember our Christmas break was interspersed with us messaging saying, why have they sacked Javier Calleja? Are they mad? They are bottom. They are currently on 28 points, 6 off safety, with obviously only 9 to play for. They lose the goal average with Granada too. So if Alaves lose on Wednesday night against Espanyol at home, they will be relegated. That is the situation for them. It is absolutely last chance saloon for them. And even then, it does feel like a stay of execution for sure. So let's just quickly wrap up the last couple of fixtures we haven't yet touched on. Getafe hosted the Rayo Vallecano in the Madrid derby that everyone was really wanting to talk about. Pasillo or no pasillo. Getafe 0, Rayo 0 was the result. So not too much to talk about here, other than Kike Sanchez Flores has lost his beard. Well, he hasn't lost it, he's decided to dismiss it. And
as far as we know.
Well, yeah, I don't think it's just, you know, misplaced it next to his keys or something. And Rayo, congratulations to them. You've taken a loss. I think I'm going to admit myself, I was totally wrong. I had Rayo to go down. I think, to be fair, most people did. But what a job they have done in securing Primera status for another season. They are officially safe with this point. So congratulations to them. Vallecas es de Primera. And finally, Espanyol 1, Osasuna 1 was the other game on Sunday afternoon evening. Ante Budimir didn't score, but Osasuna took the lead away from home, as they have tended to do quite a lot this season. But Espanyol did come back through Nico Melamed. So a decent point for them. They're not quite safe yet, but in a pretty decent position just behind Rayo. So it shouldn't be too long for Espanyol.
Two cracking finishes as well. That's my interjection on that game.
Yes, absolutely. Kike Barca and Nico there. So that wraps up the matches in La Liga, of course. There's plenty more to come in midweek, but we're not done here yet. We'll have our MVP and our moments of the weekend to come. It's that time, listeners. It's MVP time. I'll kick us off this week. There's only one man that I think should win this week, and that is Man Mountain, Jorge Molina. I mean, how do you even describe a performance like this? He comes on in the second half as a substitute for the injured Luis Suarez, who had already put in a good performance himself. And he just comes on and says to everyone, look guys, I am the Don here, I am the master. The assist for Puertas for a start is fantastic. He drives down the left wing, defying his age, crosses the ball, fantastic finish by Puertas. Then he scores himself. Then he basically sets up Uzuni for his first goal in a Granada shirt. Doesn't technically count as his assist because the defender gets in the way, but that's a technicality. And then he wraps it all up with another fantastic goal. And he scored 5 goals against Mallorca this season. A hat-trick in the first round and 2 again in this emphatic win. He's the second oldest goal scorer in La Liga history behind Donato. You know, I mean, Granada tweeted it after the game, probably more in jest than anything, but they said you know, at Luis Enrique and with a picture of Jorge Molina celebrating. I mean, why not? Toma Lucho, why not? Jorge Molina to Qatar. That's what I'm calling. Rory, who's your MVP?
Yeah, well, speaking of getting to 10, I'm going to go with Jordi Alba, who made 10 assists this weekend. That is his record in La Liga. The last time that he, well, the only other time that he managed that was the 2018-19 season. And when you take into account the fact that he's no longer passing to Lionel Messi and the considerable amount of opportunities that Barcelona tend to waste, it's pretty good going for him. I have to say, I think that that's a pretty impressive total. It takes him to third in the league for assists. It's only Benzema and Dembélé have more than him. He also scored a hell of a goal in this match. Dani Alves crosses it to him, and I mean, it was the same connection that we saw at Camp Nou. It was in the Camp Nou match, he scored against Atleti. Alves hung a ball.
I was there again.
Hung a ball up to the back post, and in that game, the ball was sort of hanging mid suspense. I think everyone kind of stopped and waited for the ball to drop, and we were all like, don't hit it. Well, certainly I was, don't hit it. But this time against Betis, it was set up perfectly for him and he couldn't have struck it any sweeter. A goal and assist for Jordi Alba. Got the assist for Ansu Fati's goal as well. And yeah, you have to say that he's been a key part of them getting Champions League. As much as he's kind of a villain of Spanish football, he's also one of the best left-backs that's been around in the last 10 years. So yeah, credit to him this week. And I think he deserves this Champions League place as much as anyone in the Barcelona squad.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been fantastic for them in recent weeks, especially. I'm going to go for another Spaniard, but this one probably won't be in Luis Enrique's World Cup squad, even though he probably should be. It's Iago Aspas. He got on the end of this... You mentioned the Denis Suarez pass. He got on the end of that and smashed it in at the near post. But the second goal is the one I want to talk about. He's got a free kick on the edge of the box. He's already been brought down to provoke the red card for Chimo Navarro. And we all know Iago Aspas can hit them, especially you being a Barca fan. He hits it pretty strong, but it's straight into the wall. And you're thinking, oh, he's missed that. But then it comes back to him, and he pretty much, on the half volley, just smashes it straight in. And Fernando Pacheco in goal, he just doesn't know where to look. He can't believe it. He's been beaten by effectively a 1-2 off the wall for Iago Aspas. And yeah, he's in that Aspas mode where everything he does is perfect and brilliant. And even when he makes that initial error, he turns it into something brilliant. And he's just magical to watch. And Celta are so lucky to have him. As everyone knows, he's on 16 or 17 goals in La Liga this season, depending on whether you give Puertas the own goal last week. But he is top of the Zara charts, ahead of Rado Tomás, ahead of Juanmi, ahead of plenty of others. So he'll be a very worthy recipient of that if he holds out in the final few weeks. I'd love him. So he's my MVP pick here. Rory, who's round us off with your second pick?
Yeah, well, you asked me earlier, how do you explain the fact that Villarreal only got a point against Sevilla? Well, if 50% of it was divine intervention, then the other 50% of it was Yassine Bono. He was absolutely sensational, especially in the first half. There's two really good saves from headers from Juan Foyt and Pau Torres, kind of close range from set pieces. They were remarkable on their own. And then he comes up with an incredible save against Giovanni Lo Celso. So the ball kind of drops in the box and it's kind of bouncing around there. And Bono, sort of almost video game like, sort of, he kind of makes up 5 yards in the space of half a second almost. It's incredible how quickly he gets out. Then he gets his hand out to stop the volley from Lo Celso, and in the second half, he made some really good saves as well. And I think he's been magnificent for them. And this match really kind of illustrated it. I tweeted out earlier that there's a discussion. I think maybe Courtois still just shades it. But there's a discussion to be had about whether he's been the best goalkeeper in La Liga. And he was absolutely fantastic. Even on the goal, he's in there kind of challenging for the header just before Rafa Mir wins it, before Koundé pokes it home, and without his presence, maybe Mir doesn't win that header, so distracting the defenders. But yeah, Bono is my second choice for MVP. We're going to move on to moments of the week now, I believe. Matt, what are you going for?
Indeed. Well, you come to a Friday and you think, you're looking ahead to the La Liga weekend and you're thinking, you know, what's going to happen? What kind of storylines are we going to be talking about on a Sunday night? And of course, the Madrid derby dominated all the the midweek discussions, pasillo, no pasillo, all this kind of frankly ridiculous talk in the Spanish media. And then you watch a game like Levante Real Sociedad and you're just refreshed again, because this is fantastic football to watch. This is why we love La Liga. And Levante, they took the lead, of course. They were pegged back. You think, oh, okay, that's the chance gone. But then to win it late on to maintain the belief. I mean, Malero's celebration nearly ripped his own shirt off. That's how much it meant to them. To see the reaction of the crowd, everything. Just incredible moment, really. And gives them a fighting chance, like we've said. So for me, that's the moment of the weekend, coming pretty early. But you've got something slightly different and slightly more comical.
Yeah, well I've resisted the temptation to go for Jordi Alba's late winner. I've gone with the moment that epitomises Cadiz. The second goal for Cadiz, it's a clearance up into high into the air, and it sort of drops, and you can see it's dropping in between the defence and the goalkeeper, Edgar Badia, who's in the Elche goal. And Ruben Sobrino sprints from midfield, almost from the halfway line. He passes, I think it's five Elche players on the way to this ball, I counted. Beats Edgar Badia to the ball, who's slow, it's an error from him, let's not beat about the bush, but beats Edgar Badia to the ball in the air, heads it over him, and then has a tap in. It shows the kind of desire and the willingness to put in those extra yards to make the difference in the margins through effort that Cadiz have really sort of gained points from, and how they've lived their kind of whole time in La Liga since they came back up, really. But this Ruben Sobrino, again, we know he's not the most talented player in the world, technically gifted, but he more makes up for that with hard work, and he got a reward for it in this one. So that's my moment of the week.
Yeah, a very good one to choose too. There were plenty of them this weekend. We could have had a completely different set, but happy with the ones we've gone for there. Well, that just about wraps it up for us this weekend. Thank you very much, Rory, for your contributions. Thanks as well to Paul McGarrigy and to Romain Darquet for their insights earlier on. We've got another round of fixtures coming thick and fast, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday in La Liga. We could have the top four completely sealed. We could have one relegation place decided, or we could have everything still on the line going into the next weekend. So plenty of drama ahead, I'm sure. Please stick with us on La Liga Lowdown for your coverage. Check out our website, laligalowdown.com, for all our latest content there. Rory, you've got a couple of pieces on there recently. I think Barcelona one comes to mind, doesn't it?
Yeah, there was a Busquets one. Bit of a weird trip down memory lane, but worth it in my view.
Absolutely. Absolutely worth it. Listener, definitely worth it. So, thank you very much, everyone, for listening. We hope you join us again in midweek for Match Day 36 recap, but for this one, for 35, that is all we have time for. Thank you for listening. Vamos La Liga.
Rezando Alessio.
Va Melero. Gol. Perdonan, miró 89 de partit. La responsabilitat per a Melero. No volia mirar Morales. No volia mirar Dani Cárdenas.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.